Here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you stick with us here at 960 The Patriot, then we're going to be talking about cars, maybe perhaps your car, if you have a car problem, a car question. If there's a dispute at the dinner table and you want me to break the tie because the wife says this and son says this or whatever, whatever, then 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the easy way to get in. And now's the time because Paul's on the line. I'm going to get to him in about 30 seconds, but you're welcome to call in as well, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. They've been around since 1967, folks. It's not because they rip people off and can't fix cars. 1967. Auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance is what everybody does. But they are some kind of leaders in the diagnostic thing. If they can get it to happen, they can find it and fix it. That's the key to the word. If they can get it to happen. If it only happens every other Thursday between noon and midnight, that's going to be kind of tough. But they're willing to kind of help you understand what to look for and what to do to see if you can change the noise, the hiccup, the miss, the smell. That kind of stuff. So Larry Harker's is good. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Been around a long time, and I'm really proud to recommend them. Paul, thank you for calling in early. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call again. This concerns my 1970 C10 350 that was upgraded with HEI 26 years ago.
Okay.
Untouched since then.
Okay.
At highway speed, it suddenly quit. Restarted itself in a few seconds with a loud exhaust bang. That happened twice. After getting home and parking it, it would not start. No spark. I have power at the distributor. I don't know how to diagnose HEI. I don't have a manual for it.
I can tell you what's wrong with it right now.
Okay.
It's the pickup assemblies. The pickup is you take the cap off, then you take the rotor, and there's a coil that's around the shaft, and there's two wires from it, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts that if you were to take a pair of tweezers and just kind of touch one or both of those wires, it's broken. And the pickup assembly is also has an arm from that to the vacuum advance, so as we go faster and the vacuum advance pulls, then we advance the timing. So the pickup assembly, one end of it is stationary, but the other end of it is moving all the time. So just go put a pickup. You're going to have to pull the distributor out of it.
You can't do it in place?
No, because you have to pull the shaft out to get the other thing you could do if you wanted to is just take your distributor down and get a rebuilt distributor from an auto parts store if you wanted. But the process is to set the distributor where I always set the distributor where the rotor faces 12 o'clock. And then I pull the distributor. You're going to pull the cap off of it. You're going to pull the rotor off of it. Then on the bottom of the gear, you're going to knock the pin out. You're going to take the gear off. Then you're going to pull the shaft out, put it in a vise, and then you're going to take, I think it's two screws, and you take the pickup assembly out, put a new one in, put the shaft back in it, and go from there.
Oh, wow. So it might be a good idea to pull the distributor and take it to a shop so they could do that part of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or not?
No. Certainly. I can't speak for all shops, but I can speak for the shops that I kind of represent. There's none of us would have a problem. What part of town are you in?
Sun City.
Okay. Heck, you got 38th Avenue and Indian School, Harker's, who else have we got?
Automotive Dynamics?
Yes. Maybe. Automotive Dynamics, yeah. I would call them and say, I'm going to pull the HEI distributor out. Well, first of all, you want to take the cap off and see if one of those two wires is broken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you're going to...
The pickup assembly is not something you just reach in and pull out like a module. It's a lot more to it.
Well, it circles the shaft, and the shaft goes from the gear to the bottom that engages the camshaft all the way to the rotor. So there's no way to get that out.
Okay, I got you. I didn't know what it looked like. I haven't. You know, like I said, I've never been inside a HEI.
Okay,
very good.
Let me think out loud here for a minute. I am 99% sure you have a bad pickup, but it also, and the thing that bugs me the most is that backfire. That backfire. The only thing that in the HA distributor that we replace is the module and the pickup. How about this? How about you call a couple of places and ask them for an HEI, and you're not going to be able to use the 70 model. You're going to have to say it's a 76. And you're going to say, how much is a rebuilt HEI distributor for a small block Chevy? And why don't you just do that? Just go down and get another distributor, put the rotor back on it, slide it back down, put the rotor at 12 o'clock or wherever you decide to put the rotor, and put a cap on it. That way we don't have to worry about whether it's the module, which might be 10%, and Mark believes 90% is going to belong to that pickup assembly. Unless, of course, you pull the wires and they're broken, and then you say, okay. But there's only two parts. Now, a third part is the coil that sits in the cap, but you're going to take the cap off and set it over here. The coil's going to stay there. This isn't a coil problem. This is a module or a pickup, and it's 90% pickup and 10% module.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks very much, Mark. I sure appreciate it.
No, it's quite all right. You gave me good information, and that helps. I like the backfire stuff. When you start I was thinking pickup from the get-go, especially when I heard no start and backfire. that's how important
just,
that is.
It acted just like I had turned the switch off.
Yeah.
For a couple seconds and back on. So yeah. It was clearly ignition. I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing I just wrote down, it's funny because I've been talking about a pickup assembly, and I just wrote down Paul 70 C10 350 HEI, and then I wrote pole piece. Well, there's two sides to my brain. The pickup assembly is a common name for it, but oftentimes it's called the pole piece. So if that helps you,
piece.
Yeah, it's the same. Okay?
Okay, very good. Thanks,
right.
Mark.
You betcha. Speaking of old cars and stuff, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I should have been doing this a long time ago. I should have shared with you a long time ago what I already know and what we already do, but somebody brought it to my attention. There's a company named Dorman, D-O-R-M-A-N, and they are just one of the most wonderful companies in the United States, and this is what they do. Chrysler, okay? Chrysler has an oil filter housing, and the Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram 3.6, 3.2 V6 is 2014 to 2018. This oil filter housing is the biggest piece of dog manure you've ever seen. And you can't get to stop leaking, and it's just unbelievable the amount of money and time everybody's spending putting gaskets and silicone and doing this and do that. Dorman, somebody brings this to Dorman's attention. They rebuild it, and instead of being plastic, it's now metal, and it's a permanent fix. And it's cheaper than the new one if you were going to put a new piece of crap on it. They do that. Now, we use them all the time. They make us heroes. They make stuff for your cars that... I'll give you a couple examples. On a Ford Taurus and a Mercury Sable 96 to 2005, the harmonic balancer comes apart. They make that part. The engine timing cover on Chrysler's 2012 to 19, Dodge's 12 to 19, Jeep 13 to 19, and Ram 13 to 15. Engine timing cover with an upgraded water outlet. The water outlet is the problem. So you replace the timing cover and the water outlet again and again and again until you buy a Dorman, and then you don't do it again. So those of you that work on your own cars, when you end up with something that's dealer only, why don't you go to Dorman.com, and let me make sure that I'm even telling you that that's the right email address, and I'm looking real hard right here at their brochure. Yes, DormanProducts.com, D-O-R-M-A-N, and it's a great idea to go there and look at your car and see what it is. The other day we were working on a 65 Corvair, and we need to do some oil leaks at the head, and we don't want to pull the head off. So our parts department, which by the way, in my opinion, is the best parts department's ever had. I got Jeff and Sean in there, and these guys can find anything I want, anything we need. But anyway, they really know the Dorman catalog, and so they were able to find some pushrod tubes and vent tubes to fix this for us that weren't available anywhere else, and they make them. So it's a pretty cool deal, D-O-R-M-A-N. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, that should be on your phone. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I have two golf cart tires that were driven on underinflated, and so the bead's broken.
Okay.
You know, so I tried to inflate them with my little, you know, cigarette lighter tire inflator, but of course the bead's broken, so they don't inflate. So do I have to take the tires off and, like, bring them to discount to have them reseated? Or?
No. No, I wouldn't think so. Let me ask you a question. The tire itself, you say the bead's broken?
Yeah, it's not, like, seated. So when I hook up my little home tire inflator, I just hear the air rushing,
okay,
like, around, you know, between the rim and the bead of the tire.
All right, let me change what you said. I've broke the bead loose from the wheel, and I don't have enough air pressure to reinflate it and put the bead back on the wheel. And all you have to do is take that down to Discount Tire, and they'll do that for you in about 2 seconds. Don't do anything. Just take both tires and both wheels down there, and on the side of the tire it says maximum inflation. And I suspect
22 pounds.
Okay, I suspect that this accident was caused by someone that was visiting your house and somebody else was driving it, and can this be blamed on?
Right.
Okay.
I didn't check. I wasn't checking the tire. Let them get underinflated. So then when they drove on it,
okay,
then the thing. So it was my fault. I take responsibility.
And you and I would be best friends and best neighbors for the rest of our lives, because I know how to raise my hand too. There's a good chance that you didn't do any damage, and Discount Tire knows good from bad, and I work for them a lot. I like them a lot. If this is a free commercial, it's okay. I don't care. I'm just telling you, take it to them. Tell them you want 22, and I'll tell you why. I have golf carts up at the ranch, and the kids are constantly hitting stuff with them. And I have found the path of least resistance is just to air them up to maximum inflation, and then that keeps them from blowing the bead off of them. And so for me, and it also makes the battery of life of the golf cart longer, because it's easier to pedal a bike with fully inflated tires than pedal a bike with half inflated tires. And so you have a little extra mile per gallon or mile per kilowatt. But anyway, Discount Tire, any tire store, but Discounts, I'm sure it's Saturday morning. They might be kind of busy, but you might have to
wait. I'll drop them off. I got one other question.
Okay.
You know, on those, you're talking about oil filter. Like on the Toyota, the plastic oil filter canisters.
Uh huh.
Do you have a lot of problem where those are really stuck, like they've been over torqued and they crack when you try to take them off?
That is a problem. I don't have the catalog in front of me, but you can go to Dorman. But the answer is yes, and the answer is that many times they're over tightened when really they shouldn't be, and then that really makes them tough to get back off. Then you end up usually breaking them when you put big pipe wrenches and strap wrenches on them and all kinds of stuff. So the answer is that is a problem. I'm not quite sure it's the biggest problem on my radar, but it is a problem. And go to Dorman and punch in your Toyota oil filter housing and see what they say.
They sell a metal one. A lot of YouTubers, they get rid of the plastic one and just put a metal one.
Okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see it too, though, where the plastic ones crack. Because they got those fins, like, you know, some of the wrenches, they like grip on those fins, and then you crack the fins on the housing.
I'm not a fan of stuff like that being plastic. So if I have an option, I'm going to go with an aluminum or a metal one. And I'm not going to have any problem squeezing down with a filter wrench to spin it off. I'm not concerned about that. So, I mean, if everybody would follow the directions on the box, they'd seat the filter and then put it onto a quarter to a half a turn. But you guys, there's guys out there that do two or three turns on it, and it makes it impossible. And then you end up driving a big piece of rebar through the filter so that you have enough torque to get the filter off. So, yeah, we see, you can imagine, we see everything. But anyway, thanks very much, Bob. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Got five lines open, and we'll be right back. Well, thank you for sticking with us through the break. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour and 45 minutes, we're going to be here talking about car repair problems. We just talked about golf cart tires. We can talk about oil, gasoline. I especially like those kinds of calls that either are created by the wife or the husband that says, we have an argument and you get to settle it. And she says this and I say this. I'm really good at that. I mean, Judge Judy's got nothing on me except I'm a lot nicer than that lady is. So, if any kind of car question, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange, Phil. Phil actually knew Fred Flintstone when tires were made of rock. Phil is that old. He's been around transmission since 1968 in the very beginning of transmissions, a little bit before that. But now we have electronic, and here's the real issue. Phil says, Mark, he says, we're just, before we used throttle, where the throttle pedal was, and we used engine vacuum, and we'd use a little bit of speed to help shift the transmission. Today, it's all electronics. The computer makes its mind up. It knows where your foot's at, how fast you're going, what the RPM is, how many people are in the car, how much fuel you got in it, all kinds of stuff. And he said, so it's just the same. We're doing the same thing, but we're just doing it in a different way. Well, as a result of that, there's going to be problems with connections, electrical connections, and sensors and all that kind of stuff. You lose a speed sensor, the thing won't shift out of first gear, because it doesn't think you're going anywhere. So, feels really good. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And if you have a problem and you can duplicate it, then Phil says, give them a call, and they'll take a ride with you, and they're going to want you to show them the problem, and then they're going to probably want to drive the car. But you can't just take their test drive technician on a two-hour jaunt and trying to make it happen. He says that's a difficult thing to do. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. When it comes to car repair, the best thing that you can do is get on an oil change interval, and there are three oil change intervals. We have to remember we have three kinds of oil. We have conventional oil, which I call Fred Flintstone oil, which is from my dad and my grandpa all the way to today. A conventional oil is the oil we've used for the last 50 years. Then we have a synthetic oil, and the synthetic oil is more man-made. And when it's man-made, and they use oil to make it, the additive package and everything is just perfect and precise. Then we have a blended oil called a semi-synthetic, which is a little bit of the old oil and a little bit of the new oil, but nobody will tell you what that is. Under the best of conditions, you'd assume that you'd have a 50-50, 50% conventional and 50% synthetic. I can't tell you, well here, I can tell you that that relationship is secret. I can tell you that. But I can also tell you that it's unimportant, because conventional oil, the cheap oil changes, the ones for $20, $30, $35, those are going to last 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Now, your shop may put a 3,000-mile sticker on there. They may put a 5,000-mile sticker on there and call you back for an oil change in that time frame. Sometimes they do it with self-serving. They bring you back early so they can have an opportunity to look at your car and sell you a tire rotation or a cooling system flush or a transmission flush or whatever. Or if they do the 5,000, you may live in Ahwatukee or Sun Lakes or Sun City, and they notice that you drive 5,000 miles a year, so they put a 5,000-mile sticker on that, and they bring in once a year, which is appropriate. It's very appropriate. So then you have synthetic oils and between 12,000 and 20,000-mile oil changes, and I do 14,000 to 15,000. So those are the kinds of things that you have. If you drive 15,000 miles a year and you use a synthetic oil, and by the way, oil is backwards compatible. So you can put oil in your 55 Chevy, you can put oil in your 32 Ford, your synthetic oil, you can do all that. I don't care what anybody else tells you, and I don't care, it's not true that if once you start on synthetic, you can never go back to conventional. The engine has no brain, and it doesn't know what kind of oil you put in there. You could put peanut butter or Wesson oil in there, and the computer wouldn't know. So all these wives' tales and all those YouTube geniuses out there are telling you something different. So the people that we have in the retirement community, Sun Lakes, Ahwatukee, Mountain Park Ranch area, we put them on a 5,000-mile oil change interval. We use conventional oil, and we bring them back in at the beginning of the summer. So everybody comes in at the beginning of the summer, so they go through this summer, which is the most brutal time in Phoenix, with fresh oil. That's it. So the semi-synthetic is for those that drive between 7,500 and, you know, I don't know, 5 to 7,500, 5 to 8, somewhere around there. And then after that, we go to the synthetic oil. So it's kind of like, how many miles a year do you drive? And we try to tailor the oil change interval to you. As you can imagine, it's a little bit better if I bring you in every 3,000 miles because, and I'm using words that are the vernacular of my industry, we get a chance to look your car over. And, of course, looking your car over means additional sales. So these are sales-generated ideas. The reason we bring in at 3,000 miles when really you should have a 10,000-mile interval is so that we can rotate your tires and service your transmission and flush your cooling system and do your brakes and do all that stuff. It's really not necessary because if your car's less than 10 years old, it's pretty new. We're talking about the highest version of Windows and you know, Apple. It's just a good car. They don't need service at 3,000-mile intervals. That's just a waste of natural resources. So if you don't know where your car belongs, then look at the owner's manual. And the owner's manual will tell you what to use and what the oil change interval. And it'll be right there on your maintenance schedule. It'll say change your oil every 3,000 miles or 90 days or 120 days, whatever. It'll tell you. So you should follow that. And really and truly, unless you have a reason to deviate from that, what the manual says, then you should just do what the manual says. The manual is written by the people that made the car. The guys that work for me, Mark Salem, and all the other people in our repair industry, we're going to be hard-pressed to deviate. However, there are some exceptions in this respect. You have a 3/4-ton truck, and most of the time the truck is empty and you're using it around town. That's one kind of oil. But you also haul a giant boat, and you go to Flagstaff a lot. And so you're going up there, and that's uphill and downhill, and that's a big heavy boat, and we might change your oil and move you up a level or elongate your oil change intervals to give you a better product. Now, it's not likely that some in our industry are going to give you a better product because that cuts their own throat because instead of seeing your truck every 3,000 miles, now we're going to move you to 5 to 7,500 miles. You can see the difference. So just be careful. I think the sin is, and I see this a lot, the door sticker shows that the car has to come back in that 3,000 miles for an oil change, but the receipt shows a premium synthetic oil that has a life of 12 to 20,000 miles. So I'm putting a premium oil in your car that has a life from, let's go 15 to 20,000 miles, but I'm calling you back every 3,000 miles and changing your oil. That's just really not the kind of shop that you want to deal with. You want to deal with a shop that has their interest second to yours. And yours is always first. That's how it works. Mark@MarkSalem.com is my email address. We're going to come back in just a few minutes. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. And then you're welcome to call in 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday on Under the Hood here on KKNT. 34 minutes after the hour of 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, I should say. I'm looking at the wrong clock, and I have a clock on my screen here that gives me time zones and stuff like that, and I neglected to just minimize that, but I'll do it to the next break. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. That northeast area up there in the valley is a very difficult one for me to find good shops in. Because of this reason, oftentimes the shops are purchased and sold and purchased and sold. I need 3 to 5 years under the same management because we're going to know if he's a good shop in 3 to 5 years. Well, there's a lot of them up there that aren't. There's a lot of them all over the valley that have bad Googles, lots of bad Google reviews. Some of them have other negative reputations that are readily available on the internet. And stuff like that. So when we pick shops, it's important to understand that we pick them and the criteria is pretty tight. And if a shop has a really problem and doesn't take care of the customer or at least make me real happy about how their effort, then we just drop them. And that happens maybe once every 5 years. But Blackwell's been around a long time, and he kind of covers that whole northeast area. So if you're in that area and you're looking for a good shop, 40th and Greenway, Tom Blackwell's Automotive. He's a good guy. Let's go to the phones. Gary, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. Good morning to you as well. I heard your conversation about golf carts earlier, and I actually have a golf cart battery question.
Sure.
if you're able to help me with that.
Sure.
I've had this golf cart for a number of years. I had the batteries, all new batteries replaced, not quite 3 years ago. And, I failed because I haven't ridden it or done anything with it. It's just been sitting in the garage. And I failed to check the levels in the battery. Well, come to find out, I went out there to use it and it was totally dead and the cells were all dry. When I was reading in the manual, it says when that happens, you've permanently damaged it. Is there, I have several questions, but first one is there any way to bring that back to life, or have you just damaged it to the point where they're history?
Oh, I can answer this really easy. I have a golf cart the other day, and it's got six batteries in it, and I looked at them, and they were dry, and I added battery water to them just to cover the plates, just to cover the plates. I charged them up, and they're fine. What you're being told, that once you run them dry, they're ruined forever, is just flat-out bull whatever. So what you want to do is, and you can use tap water, just don't use dirty tap water, and don't use RO water. Okay, so you can.
I did get some distilled.
That's fine.
I used the distilled.
Yeah. Now you're
but
just.
When I charged it with the charger, it didn't. I think the charger. I have like a pro. I think it's called a Pro Fit. But it doesn't. It didn't. It has safety things or something in the charger, but the charger wouldn't work.
Okay.
And I think the charger's fine. The charger is also. Fairly new. I bought it at the same time as I've got the batteries. But is there, and I don't need to, I don't know, I was so confused reading, you need to put the electrolyte like sulfuric acid
Stop. We're kind of rambling around here. I don't care what you decide to do. I'm going to tell you, I own a golf cart up at the ranch. The kids drive it, the grandkids drive it, my wife drives it, whatever. I've been in, and when I ran Ahwatukee Mobile for 9 years, we did lots of golf carts.
2 minutes.
So I've been, and I'm a good battery guy. So nobody puts sulfuric acid back in a battery. That's only those Google guys out there. They know everything. We want a 50-50 mix of battery acid and water. So put it back in. The problem with your charger is it probably needs some minimum voltage to light up, and you don't have any.
Right.
So at that, how many batteries do you have?
Six.
Do you have a voltmeter?
I do, yes.
Okay. Find a positive and negative that says 12 volts on it. Okay?
Okay.
And then when you do, hook up your jumper cables to your car. Don't turn your car on. Just hook up the jumper cables and touch the positive and negative to the two that you have that say positive and negative.
Okay.
And now we have 12 volts in the system. and there's entirely possible the battery charger will start to work now.
1 minute.
Oh, so basically I just use the battery in my truck to charge get the batteries going in the golf cart.
The battery voltage up high enough to where the golf cart can go, okay, I know that I'm connected to batteries now because I see 12 volts. I don't know what your motor is. I don't know what voltage your motor is. I don't know any of that. I'm just saying if you got a digital voltmeter, find a positive and negative that says 12 volts. You'll find one of them that says 12 volts over here, or one of them that may say 24 volts over here, whatever, whatever. I don't know. Just find one that says positive and negative is 12 volts. Hook up your car to that positive and a negative. Then hook up your battery charger, and I think you have a 95% chance of it working. If it's not working, it's probably because of a bad connection, but more than likely that will put you over the hump. As far as filling them up, I would have filled them up with water. I wouldn't have used acid, and I think if you did use acid, you probably caused some of their demise.
I did not use any. I just used distilled water.
Okay,
that was it.
That's perfect.
Okay.
That's what I'd do. But
there such thing as 6-volt batteries, or would they automatic? I have the Trojan. I don't know if those are automatically 6.
Do you have
12 volt or?
Okay, stop. A 6-volt battery only has 3 caps. A 12-volt battery has 6. How many caps do your batteries have?
You put them
with distilled water in them. When you pulled the caps off, was there 3 on each?
I have 3.
Okay, so those are 6-volt batteries. That's why I told you to get out your digital voltmeter. That's why I said find two terminals, a positive and a negative, that has 12 volts on it. Because I didn't know if you had a 6-volt system or a 12-volt system. It doesn't make any difference, but if you find 12 volts, hook your jumper cables up to them, and we're kind of done.
Okay, all right. So even if they're 6-volt, yeah, I can still use the 12-volt in my truck.
Yeah, because the batteries are going to be hooked in series, and so 2 6-volts make 12 volts. So.
Okay.
Here's the deal. You hook up the battery cables outside the house, okay, out of the garage. The golf cart's out there with your trucks out there. So you hook up the battery cables to the 212 volts you have, and then you go to the truck, and you hook up the truck batteries last, okay? Does that make sense? You hook up the jumper cables to the truck battery last, because if there's a spark, I don't want it sitting over all those batteries that are gassing like crazy, because it'll blow up one of them, and you'll just shake the neighborhood. So if there's a spark, I want it over by the truck. So it's always the best thing to do is when you're hooking up jumper cables, the jumper cables are hooked to the dead battery first and then to the support vehicle second. I got to run, but thank you very much, Gary. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. 44 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Let me real quick tell you about Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz has been around a long time. He's at I-17 in Bell Road. He's been around since 1987. I've known Kurtz since the early 90s. I know he's a good shop. I feel very comfortable in sending you to him. So if you're anywhere near that Bell and I-17 area, the northeast corner is Kurtz Automotive. You'll find a family-owned operation. You'll find some wonderful people and some very capable technicians. And then you got Kurt. Kurt knows right from wrong, and he's not afraid to approach the technicians about and ask them questions about why they did what they did or why they want to do what they did. And Kurt is very astute with respect to car repair, as most of us are. So if you're in that area, I-17 and Bell, Kurt's Automotive is a great place. Let's go to the phones. Caleb, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, I've got it's a 2001 Volvo XC. 70 or V70 XC. I keep having coil pack issues. So issues being it keeps killing the number 2 coil pack. Any places to start on diagnosing that problem?
When you replace, does the coil pack come just one component where you just plug it in over the top of the spark plug and plug in two wires and you're done?
It is, yes. It's a standard,
Okay.
But it's always the number 2.
Okay. I know. I heard that. Does the new coil come with a boot or do you use the old boot?
It comes with a boot.
Okay. And, is the spark plugs been replaced any time during this process where you've put a coil in it and had that same coil fail?
Yeah.
Okay.
The time before last.
Okay. Well, typically, the computer doesn't know if the coil failed or if the spark plug failed or if the boot failed. It just knows that it's sending spark to the coil and it's not seeing a jump in the RPM. The engine's seeing the motor hitting on only 4 cylinders or 6 cylinders. It hits on all 6 and it's really smooth, but as soon as we drop a cylinder, the computer knows that. So it's just blaming it on number 2. I think what I would do if I were you is, isn't that coil number the same as all the rest of them on the car?
It is.
Why don't you move 2 to 4?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give that a shot.
And now here's, because you've been doing this, I'm going to kind of change what I say to you. There's the spark plugs, there's the coil, and there's the boot and the connection. If you were to swap all of those to another cylinder and the problem moved to the other cylinder, then you'd still have to figure out which one of them it is. Okay.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I've been chasing it for about 8 months now.
Okay,
and it's a secondary car. So,
all right, I'm gonna give you. Don't tell anybody else this, okay? All right.
Yep.
Okay. I M M imports. IMM imports. And don't call them on Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but you might call them and say, Mark Salem says you guys are really good with Volvos, and I have a question for you.
Okay.
And just ask them the same question. Is there a particular reason or what am I missing when I have a code for coil number two? And I'm not even sure it's coil number two as opposed to we're missing spark on number two or we're missing cylinder participation. We had one not too long ago, not a Volvo, but we had a broken valve spring on a motor. And the customer was a YouTube guy, and he just kept putting in parts. And finally, we figure out it's got an intermittent rough idle, and when it's got the rough idle, then the spring is moving, and we've got a problem. And the cylinder's saying, hey, I've got a participation problem, but it's called a misfire code. It really isn't a misfire code. It's a broken valve spring. So keep an eye on the rough idle. Make sure that it always idles like a Volvo should. And I think his name is Twan, like T-W-A-N, something like that. I think that's the young man's name that owns it. But I've always been impressed with him, and I think it's worth a call to ask him.
Okay. All right, I appreciate your time.
Okay, good luck to you. Thank you. Lance, how can we help you today?
Well, I have a 2013 Acura RDX, and you drive down the road and you get a little bit of a rattle in the back of the car, and it's a shock or a strut, but I didn't know much about changing shocks and struts, and you always talk so much about oil, and I was impressed with the oil being zero weight, which made no sense to me, and you explained that very well. So what do I do about my shocks and struts?
Well, the first thing I would do is I'd verify the diagnosis. You're making them. You've already come to the conclusion that the shocks or struts are the cause of this noise, but if you got underneath there and wrapped a bunch of duct tape around those springs and the connections and stuff, and if you changed the noise, then you'd know which one it was. An old guy like me and a lot of the young bucks can probably go drive it, and sometimes we take the young guy and put him in the back, and the senior guy drives, and he kind of goes from left to right in the back of the car. And a lot of times, if there's windows back there, they'll just roll their window down and put their hand on the back fender, and they're feeling for the noise. But that's what really has to happen is somebody has to identify the noise and make sure. It's unusual that you have a noise with a bad strut or a shock unless the bushing's gone bad. And if that's a bushing, it's typically referred to as a clunk, a heavy clunk, and it happens all the time. And so that's what I'm used to hearing.
And that's the noise that I think that I'm is more of a clunk, but the irony is, so I had an oil change, and as a routine, ironically, it was one of those things that I said, I'm hearing this noise, and they said, we didn't hear the noise, everything's going to be fine, you're safe. And then when I had the tires rotated, they said, oh, no, you need new struts. And it seemed weird in the way it happened, and so I figured, you know what, I'm going to ask you when I get a chance.
Well, without saying names, is the place that changes your oil a general repair shop, or is it a...
Yeah, the generic, yes.
Okay. And so they do all kinds of car work as well as oil changes. So if you needed a brakes done, they would do the brakes and stuff like that, right?
Exactly.
Okay. I would simply look them in the eye, and I would find the highest ranking guy in there or woman. And I say this to my customers, say it to my daughter, Andy. She runs the joint. Say, look her in the eye and say, Andy, I'm not playing for guesses. You guys say I need struts. I got this noise in the back. If I spend $200-$400 and having struts and springs replaced, because you can do one or both or the other, and after you go in there, I don't want this noise, Andy. I don't want this noise. And if I have the noise...
Go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
And then you always ask for your old parts back, because plan B is put my old struts and shocks back on, give me my money, I'm leaving.
And what I was cutting you off with, So shocks and struts, what kind of, you know, I know we're supposed to replace them, but that's not part of the maintenance that I'm really used to because I just don't pay attention to that. What would you suggest?
Well, first of all, shock absorbers.
It's 2013.
We're talking apples and oranges here. We're talking shocks and struts, but shocks are shocks, and struts are a shock with a spring. So, I mean,
I think my vehicle has it combined.
Okay, well, then it's a strut. How many miles are on it?
About 97.
Okay. I want to tell you something. I don't change struts and shocks on anything I own, and we probably have 30 vehicles in our fleet until I have to. Okay, somebody has to complain, or we've got a strut that's leaking oil like a sieve, or we've got the bushing at the bottom of the strut or the top of the shed is all bad. Now we got metal-to-metal contact. So, no, I'm not going to guess. I'm telling you, this is an easy diagnosis. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2. So,
cool.
just go. Do you, if you don't, if you're unclear, then what part of town do you live in?
I'm up in Sunburst Farms.
Okay, give me major cross streets.
Glendale.
Okay.
Probably close to Kurtz.
Okay, all right. Well, I'd go to Kurtz, and I wouldn't go on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon, but I would say Mark Salem says you guys probably don't have a prayer in hell of finding this rattle, but I can guarantee it. I can make it happen. Can I borrow a technician?
There you go.
And I promise not to have him for a half an hour. I promise I can make it happen. I know where to go. I've already traveled around your area. I know exactly the path I'm going to take. And he can either drive, and I'll ride with him, or I'll drive, and he can roll around in the back. But that's people do that all the time, and it's okay. We're honored to be able to show off our skills and our talents. So that's
and
not
and
hard.
And that's why I appreciate your advice, because I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to start replacing things I don't need.
And really and truly, shock absorbers are something. The shock absorber's job and the strut is to push the tire down on the road. That's all. It's just to push the tire down on the road and keep it down on the road. When it goes bad, the tire starts to bounce. It cups the tire. But the symptoms are pretty dramatic. A lot of people ignore them, but then at the end of the day, you go, hey, you know, this tire's all cupped up, and this tire's got half the tread missing on it because you've got a bad shock absorber. Don't you have a bad vibration intermittently where it just shakes the whole car? Yeah, I thought, but it comes and goes, and so I don't care. Okay, well, it's time to care because now you need a tire, too. one strut, or you want to do both of them in the back? You know, what do you want to do? So that's the conversation. That's what happens.
And that's kind of like, then it gets into wheel alignment and tires.
Oh, wait a minute. No, you're jumping way ahead. There's a good chance on the rear end of that car that we're not going to have to do any wheel alignments. That's going to be an R&R. Take it off and put it on shock absorber back there. I've been wrong before, but if that's the case, it's okay. You still have to line it back up. Even then, a lot of us old-timers will just take paint, pss, pss, and we'll mark the two things, then we put the struts on, then we put the lines back where they were. We're done. It is a safety issue in the sense that we need that tire to be pushed down on the ground to stay there. The last thing we want to do is to have that tire up in the air when you're doing a panic brake and we only got three of the brakes working. So it is something that needs to be done. It needs to be addressed for the safety of the people that are riding in the car. Anyway, I got to run. Lance, good luck to you, buddy. And thank you. Those were good questions. And there is no mileage on your struts and shocks. Lance, my 2012 Dodge trucks has 140,000 miles on it, and I haven't changed the shocks on it yet at all. And I have no intention until they start leaking oil or until somebody else complains. Or if my wife drives it and one of the shocks blows off of it, which won't hurt her, of course, then I'll probably end up changing them. But that's how it works. When it comes to car repair, there are a lot of shops out there that know their business really, really well and have no problem. But do yourself a favor. Avoid the YouTube conversation. Nothing wads my panties up more than to have somebody argue with me because they read some guy on YouTube telling my customer that I'm wrong. I'm at your car. He could be in the penitentiary in Maryland. You don't know who he is. You don't know if he's an ASC Master Certified Technician, like I am. You don't know that he's been working on cars since 1968 when he first got a gas station jockey job at Ken's Broadway Shell at Broadway and Priest in Tempe in 1968. Been working on cars. My fingernails have had grease in them that long. And when I go to a wedding or something fancy, my wife scrubs them up with grinders and stuff. There's lots of guys out there like me, but you don't need YouTube. They're guessing. Do you understand? They're guessing. And here's the problem. In the dialogue between the shop and the customer, do you have a vibration? Yes. Does it shake the seat of your pants or the steering wheel? Oh, did the YouTube guy ask that? Is it temperature sensitive? Is it worse when you make a fast right turn or a fast left turn? None of that. You give him the symptoms, he tells you what's wrong with your car. That's good. So you give them the symptoms and you tell them, and then see if the doctor can do that without checking your blood pressure and your blood and your respiration and all the stuff that they do. The YouTube guys drive me crazy. It's a bunch of guys out there that want to be the heroes and hop on their horses and slay people's dragons, and all they're doing is costing everybody a whole lot of money. All right, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You're more than welcome to join us if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you had an issue with respect to the repair of your car and you're a little unclear about why and when and how much and all that kind of stuff, then I can probably guide you. I can probably help you, depending on the amount. It's kind of like a computer, and I'm not saying I'm a computer, but it's, you know, junk in is junk out, and good in is good out. And a lot of times there's three answers to my questions: yes, no, or I don't know. Now, the guys have a tough time with the I don't know part. The women don't. And so, and if you give us an answer, give me an answer, and I go left when really I should have gone right, I probably won't ever get there. But there's three answers: yes, no, or I don't know. That's it. That's how it goes. So when we talk about car and car repair issues, the thing, as you can tell, the thing that really drives me crazy is the internet, because there's so many people out there. I'm a part of a lot of Facebook four-wheel drive clubs, car clubs, and stuff like that. And I shudder when I read some of the stuff that's on there, where one guy will ask a question and 20 guys will chime in. And I agree with 5 of the 20 guys, and the other guys are just on another planet with respect to symptom analysis. If you've been with us for an hour, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. The very first caller was Paul with a 70 Chevy pickup, and he put an HEI, high energy ignition distributor, an electronic distributor, a GM electronic distributor, in a car in his truck that came with points and condenser. It's a very common issue. And so he says it backfired and then it died. And then it cranks and it doesn't start. Well, those are classic symptoms. But the backfire is often misdiagnosed as a broken valve spring or a burnt valve. So people will tell you on the internet that you probably have a burnt valve or you have a broken valve spring, and you'll spend the rest of your life going through 16 valves and 16 springs. The backfire is because the pickup assembly is part of the timing, and the pickup assembly had a late signal which caused a backfire. And then he says it cranks but it doesn't start, and it all happened in a period of 10, 15 seconds. Everything's fine to, I'm off, you know, it's not starting and running. So those of us that have been in the industry a lot, the real issue is that he put this in 10 years ago. And the wear part of this distributor is the distributor cap and the pickup assembly. And then we kind of talked about it, and I'm hoping he's just going to take his distributor out and go down to the auto parts store and get another one. Because there's three components in that distributor. There should be a coil, there should be a pickup assembly, and there should be a module. And he'll get all of those new by buying a rebuilt distributor. So that might be best for what he's got. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another good shop in town that has my. I know the guys that own these shops. I have their cell phone numbers. They have mine. I refer people to shops all over the valley all the time because I can't handle everybody. We're in Tempe. So I'm not going to, if you're in Central Phoenix, I'm going to send you to 25th Street Auto. I'm going to send you to a couple of other shops there. If you're in the Northeast, I'm sending you to Blackwell. If you're in Mesa, I'm going to send you to Thompson's, because that's what I do. This show isn't about me and butter and my bread. This show is about helping you with your car repair problems. And I've been doing it since 1988, actually. Started in another station, but I just passed my 10 years here at KKNT. And I started in 2011. And so here we are 10 years later. 602-508-0960. What's important, though, on the shop is a guy like Tom over at Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known him since 1983. I know Tom as well as all the rest of the owners. They're honest. They're dependable. Usually it's a family operation where the wife does the business or the daughter does the business, or even the daughter can be a technician or she can be doing oil changes. There's all kinds of that happening. Kind of good for our industry, by the way, too. We also have lots of family-owned operations that are second generation. And that's real impressive as well. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, Tom's been servicing the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. I met him just before that, and I've always liked him, and I know he has a tremendous amount of integrity. So that's Action Auto. Gil, we got somebody?
Yes, we do. We say hello to Rob.
Rob, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a question about a 2020 Toyota Sienna that we purchased early last year. My wife is the one that drives this car, and the steering wheel occasionally locks up on her when she tries to start it. And when she made inquiry about it, we were told first by the dealer that it was just that when we parked it, tires weren't straight, and we had to make sure the tires were straight. And he said the way to release this is to pull the steering wheel back and forth in opposite directions, and then it will kick in and you can start the car. And then we later heard that that was a feature of anti-theft feature. And I just don't know what the problem is with it. I wonder if you have heard of it before.
Well, this is my world. So let's go back to the beginning and let's say when it happens, I want you to describe quickly what it is. For instance, is this a situation where Monday morning, you go out to the car, or Wednesday morning, or Friday morning, who cares? That morning, you go out to the car, you put your key in the ignition, and you can't turn it to the start position. It won't go to the start position.
Hi, this is Mary, the driver, and no, I've been out running errands, and I come back to the car.
Okay.
From being in a store.
Okay. Now, when you come back to the car, do you have to put a key in it, or do you have a fob that just talks to the car?
No, I have a key, and the key won't move.
Okay.
I have no...
All right.
Yeah, no starter. And then the steering wheel won't move and the key won't move.
Okay. So I need just yes and no's right now, okay? So you get back in your car. You've just done shopping and it was fine there. You put your key is it in the steering wheel or in the dash?
It's in the steering wheel.
Okay. So you put your key in the steering wheel, and when you go to turn it to the crank position, the it won't move. The key won't move from the position when
right.
you stick it in. Now, at that particular time, do you take your left hand and do you grab a hold of the steering wheel like at 11 o'clock? And do you pull and push on the steering wheel with your right hand? You're trying to unlock the ignition. Have you tried it that way?
I have bad arthritis. My husband's usually with me, so okay. He does the yanking.
Rob, it has to be yanked very hard.
Okay. Okay, so what I'm hearing is you're going to have to take your left hand and you're going to have to either pull down or push up. You're going to pull it counterclockwise or clockwise, and then the key releases. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I want you to pay attention to this. When you park your car, take your hands off the steering wheel. You've put it in park. You're sitting there and everything's fine. When you turn the key off, I want to know if the steering wheel moves. Okay? I don't want the steering wheel to go left and then jerk right a little bit. I don't want that. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Okay.
I've never seen... Yeah.
Sometimes the power steering has a center point to it. And sometimes the steering wheel will want to go back to center because it was parked with the steering wheel slightly off. Second question is, does this happen on flat parking spots as well as tilted parking spots?
I couldn't say.
Okay. Sometimes when you're in a parking lot, when you park close to the building, the parking space is slightly elevated upwards.
Right.
So the car isn't. So pay attention to that. Most of the time, well, 90% of the time, it's fair to say when I've been across this, it is a problem with the centering of the steering wheel. And most likely, and most of the time, I remember distinctly one gentleman, his driveway went up and left, and it was at a slope. And so when he got up there, he turned the key off, and it took a little bit of muscle to straighten the steering wheel to get the key to move to the start position. How many miles are on this Toyota?
About 9,500.
Okay. This is a serious issue. It's not necessarily a safety issue with respect to you being in an accident, but it is a safety issue with you being somebody in a parking lot in the middle of the evening after dark at 8 o'clock, and when they're closing the shopping center at 9, that becomes a safety issue, because now all of a sudden you're a woman stuck in your car because of this problem. I would probably elevate this a little bit at the dealership level.
2 minutes.
And I would explain to them that this is beyond your ability to overcome, and that it does it. And you can say that you talked to Mark Salem on the radio, and Mark says this is a fixable issue. I don't know what's going to be the fix, but we all agree. I think they agree, and you agree, and I agree. This shouldn't be happening.
No, and it has nothing to do with the anti-theft feature of the car, is what they told us last.
It doesn't, and I wouldn't want you to press that with respect to, I want you to look at the anti-theft because that's what I saw on the Internet. That's a bad idea. Bad idea. The anti-theft has nothing to do with what you're talking about. Nothing. Nothing.
Mark, I think you've hit it on it also, because I've noticed that the steering wheel has been perpendicular, the center bar of the steering wheel.
Yes.
Has been perpendicular when it does happen.
1 minute.
And,
okay, now,
somebody else told me, always make sure that center bar is from left to right, centered.
Okay. Horizontal.
Horizontal.
Horizontal. You are exactly right. You are exactly right. The sweet spot of your steering wheel is left to right, horizontal. And under the best of conditions, when you put it there till you took your hand off the steering wheel and then you shut the key off. I don't want your hands on the steering wheel when you shut the key off.
Got it.
And that way, now, I know my mother's gone, but she can still hear me. My mom had so many hands and fingers that she could put on her sunglasses, she could grab her purse, she could open the door, she could pop her seatbelt, and shut the car off all at the same time. And that created problems with the steering wheel, because oftentimes she turned left into a parking spot. And so she had a tough time getting her key out, because the steering wheel would have preferred to be slightly more straight. And so what I did was I went in underneath the steering wheel, and there's some holes in a big plate, and I just made the holes bigger for her. And it still had a locking steering wheel, which is an anti-theft device, but we're not talking about the anti-theft device you're talking about. The anti-theft device has to do with its ability to start. When the anti-theft device raises its ugly hand and says stop, it's not going to let you start the car. It won't let you start the car. It'll still take the key, but it'll go rub, 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 but it's not going to run. It's not going to start. So,
okay, good to know.
So anti-theft, we need to walk away from the anti-theft issue, but I am enamored by the fact that the steering wheel is 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, instead of being 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
Got it.
What part of the town do you live in?
Arcadia.
Well, Camelback and 38th Street or 28th Street.
Okay. I'd take it to 25th Street Auto, 25th and Indian School. And I would tell Billy that Mark Salem says he doesn't have a prayer in hell of fixing your car for you. And I want to tell you something. If anybody can fix it, he's right around the corner from you. Now, you really should offer the dealership. Are you still under warranty?
Yes.
Okay. You really should offer them another opportunity. And I would insist that your wife takes that car with someone, and she says to them, I'm not going to have you for an hour. We're going to drive right over there, and I'm going to park it, and then we're going to see if it happens. I'm going to be able to demonstrate. I've been practicing. I know exactly what to do to make it happen. And so I want you to come with me. This isn't going to center up the steering wheel and get the steering wheel straight. When you're going down the road, I need that steering wheel horizontal. I need 3 and 9 o'clock. I don't care what anybody says. I need 3 and 9 o'clock. Anything from there, that is an easy adjustment. We can make that adjustment underneath the front of the car. So
okay.
that might be all we need is the drag link adjusted to straighten up the steering wheel for straight ahead, and Billy could do that. And if that were to fix the car, you could take the repair back to the dealer and say, I would like you to pay for this bill or consider paying for this bill because you've tried and couldn't. This guy fixed it for $36, $55, whatever. And would you be so kind as to reimburse us because now our problem is fixed. So
good.
Talk to Billy at 25th Street Auto and then let me know what happens. I'd appreciate that. Okay?
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Good luck, Rob. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I want to talk real quick about Auto Dynamics. In my opinion, when people say I'm in Sun City, what shop should I go to? I tell them Auto Dynamics. They've been around since 1982. I've known Chuck Nide since 1968. I know that he's honest. I know that he knows how to fix problems our shops create, mine included. I have to write a check every once in a while because we make a mistake. Well, Auto Dynamics is a good shop. So if you're looking for a shop in Sun City, I'd like to recommend them. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. It's called Automotive Dynamics. Let's go to the phones. Gary, you're up next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a general question. Do any of the shops you recommend fix electric vehicles, or is that a specialty item you need to go to the dealer for? And if it's not any of your shops, what does that mean for the future of your type business?
That's a great question. I don't know anybody that's diving into them, although we do have the capabilities to talk to the car, and we are still looking at that, and we're still my shop is still raising their hands that. But let's look at the real nuts and bolts here. 1 out of 7,422,000 cars is an electric car today. And I made up that number just to give you a visual. I'm not real worried about the electric car thing because I've already been through points and condenser to electronic ignition. I've already been through cars with fuel carburetors to fuel injection. I've already been through all of these things. And they're going to have to, the electric car is going to have the same kind of cell electronics that the gasoline car. It's only not going to have a tailpipe. So we're such a long way away, but I don't know anybody that's raised their hand and said, I want electric cars. But I can tell you this. We do batteries in the Toyotas. We do repairs on those hybrid cars, which is gas and electric. We do that. But we're also not proud enough to raise our hand and say, we're not the best shop for this. Now, there is a Toyota Prius guy down on Washington that we send people to who is the genius for those hybrid cars. And he does a great job, and we send everybody that we can't fix their car to him. But the future in our cars, I mean, we've been worrying about this for a long time. We went from bias ply to radio. We went to 2-speed transmissions to 10-speed transmissions. We went from air conditioning, R1 R12 to a 134 and every other Freon. So it's a good question, and it's one that's asked often, but to be perfectly honest with you, it's just not on my radar screen at all. I'm quite sure that my kids are going to have a business to run, and under the best of conditions, my grandkids will ultimately take it over after Grandpa's, ashes has been spread and pasted. So thank you very much for bringing that up, Gary. Let's move on to Mark. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a motorcycle, a two-part motorcycle oil question for you.
Sure.
What is it about the additive package that makes motorcycle oil motorcycle oil?
Nothing. It's the label.
It's just a label.
It's a label.
Okay. Now, in my owner's manual, it recommends 4,000-mile oil changes.
What kind of oil?
On pure synthetic.
Okay. 4,000 mile?
5,000.
5,000. What year is your motorcycle?
It's a 2012 Harley-Davidson Ultra Classic.
Okay. I know where we're going with this already. First of all, your Harley-Davidson oil is made by a company I'm well aware of. Your 8090 transmission oil is a synthetic 8090 transmission oil or 8120. Your engine oil is a 2050, and you can do better than what they got in the can as far as Mark Salem is concerned. And what else we got? We got gear oil on that motorcycle. We got engine oil on that motorcycle, and you've got one other fluid there that
primary.
What, say that again?
The primary fluid.
Yeah, the primary chain is a cheap 30 weight.
Yeah,
all we got
actually on this motorcycle, they tell you in the owner's manual to put 2050 in both the motor, transmission, and the primary.
It's okay with me what you do, but let's think about it. Do we have any spark, fuel, exhaust? Do we have any tremendous changes of temperature in your primary chain case oil?
Nope. You could put almost anything in it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I'm not suggesting that you deviate from your owner's manual. I have had this question I don't know how many times in my life, and I've researched it again and again and again. Primary chain case, 30 weight. Cheap, 30 weight. And I know you guys are paying 10, 12, 15 more for a quart of primary chain case oil. And then you got engine oil, which is a good 2050. And then you've got the transmission oil, which is a synthetic, top-of-the-line transmission oil. So you can do better in all of those areas with respect to price. But I don't think you can do better in quality, because those oils are going to come from Mobil, Shell, Phillips, or Chevron.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, if Mobil's the same price for the primary for the engine oil as HD is, then, you know, you can make that decision on your own. But let's look at in the environment they live in. The primary chain case oil really and truly is just a chain oil. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's not doing a whole lot.
Now, if I had a Harley Davidson, I might explore like a 2050.
2 minutes.
And that way it flows like a 20 weight when it's cold and flows like a 50 weight when it's hot. And I like the temperature spread for the primary chain case oil, because the short drives, I like the 10-20 weight on the short side. And then all of a sudden you and your buddies decide to go someplace. And as you well know, most of the guys that go in packs like that, they're racing every now and then. And so I like the 50 weight on the top end of that. And as far as the engine oil is concerned, the 2050, I don't know if they're still calling for a 2050, but you can do a synthetic 2050, which is what that probably is, and you can probably buy it cheaper.
So no, I use nothing but synthetic 2050 in the motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they recommend.
And the Magnuson Mossack says that if we say that you have to use our products in your car, we have to provide them for free. So if Chevrolet says you have to use our coolant, it has to be provided for free. And so Harley Davidson, at least years and years ago, didn't really understand that, and neither did a lot of the bike riders, but I think it's common knowledge now. So,
I never used – I use another oil that,
It's the same way with General Motors and Motorcraft and all that. It's the same thing. It's all those oils. If they say you got to use it, you got to provide it for free. But your Harley is an example of a real hybrid with respect to fluids and lubricants. And I mean, they've done a really good job on marketing their brand. And I especially like the price point on their brand, because no matter what I sell a Harley guy, I'm a hero. With respect to fluids, that's reflect. And as you well know, you can buy them cheaper than what there is a high and a low price point with respect to that. Anyway, Mark, That was Mark. Josh and Ken, you stay there because you're number two, one and two on the other side of this break, and that means we have open lines available at 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I'm going to do as fast as I can so I can get to the callers. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is owned by Nate. Nate is the kind of guy you hope marries your daughter. He is a stand-up guy. He knows what he's doing. He's polite as all heck. He's married, too, by the way. But he knows diesels. He knows the Chevy, the Ford, the Dodges, and most of the other diesels he has a pretty good handle on. So Nate's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. If you have a Chevy, a Dodge, or a Ford, and you're having a tough time getting it fixed because you got a check engine light and you got low power and the wastegate isn't being opened and there's vacuum leaks and all that kind of stuff, Nate can take care of those. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Let's go to the phones. Josh, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I just bought a Cadillac, and it didn't come with a spare tire. What do you recommend? It's got high-speed tires on it now. Do you recommend on my next set run flats or?
You know, there's a couple of things. Well, let me ask you this. When was the last time you had a flat tire?
Well, I haven't. I mean, I just got the vehicle in November.
I know, but in your life.
In general, probably at least 2 or 3 years.
Okay. People that have the run flat tires, they can trust those, but you're really limited with respect to speed when you're limping in. So it's not like you're going to be able to drive a run flat at 70 miles an hour. That's a bad idea. There's a lot of people that will go get a small wheel and tire and put it into the trunk of the car and have their own. There's a lot of people that will carry those cans of sealer. And you don't pull the nail out, but if it's cut with some big piece of metal, you're not going to ever seal it up. And at that point, you're going to have road service, which brings us to the third option. And people with no flats oftentimes will embrace AAA or other road service groups. But most of the time, you have road service on your policy, on your insurance anyway. So if you do, then at that point, other than some inconvenience, it's not a big deal. You have a flat tire, you call a tow truck, takes you to a discount tire or whatever, and you get a tire. So those are kind of your options. For me, I haven't had, knock on wood, God, please, Lord, don't hit me and make me admit next week I had a flat, but I haven't had a flat in I don't know how long, and neither has anybody in my family. And so I just think that the risk is much different today than it was before.
Okay, Mark, I appreciate the information.
Okay, good luck to you, Josh. Thank you very much. Ken, you're up next. How can I help you?
I was inquiring about getting my transmission rebuilt. I got a 2006 Monte Carlo, 3.9.
Okay. And what's the matter with the transmission? What's it doing or not doing?
Well, when I bought the vehicle, somebody didn't fix the dipstick. And it took me a while to figure out that's where it was leaking. So it's obvious they ran the transmission low on fluid. It was weak. You know, after I bought it, I noticed it was getting weak, and now it still works, but I can tell it's shifting bad, and it, you know, it's hesitant when you take off.
Okay, well,
and even now it's making an idle rough.
Okay, all right. Well, you got a lot of moving parts here. A transmission is a hydraulic component. When it runs out of fluid, it doesn't move. We're done. No more right. Damage. That's it. You're just not going to move. So it's not like you can just slip this thing and wipe the whole thing out on anything that's been made in the last 15 years, because it's not going to let you do that. So I think what I would do if I were you is I would have someone identify what you've got right now. Because there's a lot of times people come in, I won't do it. You can't bring your car to my shop and tell me to rebuild the transmission if I can't find out that it is, in fact, the transmission. Because when I give you your car back after giving you a bill for $2,000 or $3,000, and you go, well, it's still doing it, and I go, wait a minute, you diagnosed it. You asked me to fix the transmission. You don't want to be in that bad situation. So what part of town do you live in? I'll send you to somebody who you could just take
it to. I'm right in the middle of Phoenix.
Okay. What about Billy at 25th Street Auto? Indian School, 25th Street? Close?
I heard you mention his name earlier, and I thought about calling him. I will do so.
Okay, and then I got another guy. I've got David over at Martin's Auto on 16th Street south of Indian School, I think, or south of Thomas, Martin's Auto. He's been around since, Jesus was a baby. So either one of those two guys, I think it would be good to. have them drive it, have them look at it, and make sure you can demonstrate the issue to them. And then the question is if this was your car, what would you do? And could I take your family to Tucson on a shopping spree? And if he won't let you take his family, that means he knows the transmission's NFL, not for long.
I appreciate engaging in a conversation with you. I tried to before, but I got to a slow start. I know you don't have much time for it. Thank you.
Okay, and then we're going to hope, Bill, you stay there. I'll be right back. Can I take the break now?
You got 30 seconds.
Oh, do I really have to kill 30 seconds? Okay, fine. 602-508-0960. My email is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. You're welcome to send me an email. And if you'll give me a phone number, sometimes I have lots of questions I got to ask you, like how many miles it's got and stuff that you forgot to tell me. So it's kind of nice, and I always call on a blocked line. So if I call and you don't answer, I'll leave a message and say, hey, I'm going to call back in 10 minutes, and hopefully you'll answer. That's how it works. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. When I started in high school in gas stations was 1968. Thompson's Auto Repair in Towing in Mesa, they come from families that were back then Mobil dealers, Union 76 dealers, and Shell dealers. So Brian and Thelma, their parents were the people that ran, and when I went to service station meetings with my boss, I met their parents. So when you have that kind of a track record, then I have to tell you the only shop that qualifies with my list of requirements is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They've been around at that location since 1970, and they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. It's well worth the drive, and when you meet Brian and his wife Thelma, you'll understand why I am so excited to have them on our list of the best car repair shops, according to Mark Salem. Let's go back to the phones, and let's pick up with Bill. Bill, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I have a Jeep Compass, and it has the auto stop and start on it, which Jeep, I guess, thinks it will save fuel. I'm concerned about battery and starter, and the fuel, as I've tried to test it, sometimes using it, sometimes not, doesn't seem to make much difference. Your recommendation?
You know, it's a flip of a coin. I want to tell you that I understand that the starter and the battery and that kind of stuff is an issue, but to be honest with you, in those cases that I've been asked to look at, address, examine the car on behalf of insurance companies or lawyers or dealerships or car manufacturers, it's not been a problem. It is an emissions idea. I don't think it's the best one they're going to come up with. It is just too uncomfortable to have the engine die at a traffic light and have the oil pressure go to zero for the normal person. We're trained them all these years to do this, and now we're telling them just ignore the fact that the gauges went to zero. That's just not going to work. So I don't see a problem that's created by the start and stop. Obviously, you can manage whether it's on or off as much as you want, but I want to kind of say don't worry about the starter and the battery and the electrical system. I think that's not something you should spend much time on.
Well, Jeep must consider it a problem with the battery because they put a heavy-duty battery in because of it.
Well, and okay, if for some reason we're going to double or triple the time that we're going to end, then yes, we're going to put a bigger battery in there. And according to our studies, and I'm just making this up as I go along, our studies, we need a 400 CCA battery for normal traffic, and we're going to put a 700 CCA battery in this start-stop vehicle. We're going to make sure that we have it. But in reality, a battery's expected life in the Arizona area with our extreme hot and cold temperatures, plus our bumpy roads, which vibration is a killer of batteries, is really a 3 to 4 year anyway. So if you have a start-stop problem and you have a battery that's in its third or fourth year, you're already past what I believe to be is the window of replacement.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. Leave it alone is what you're telling me.
If I had one of those, I would just simply disable it. I wouldn't like that.
Well, I have to turn it off every time I start it. There's no way to disengage it, at least that I know of. Nothing in the owner's manual that says I can disengage it and have it off.
Okay.
I have to turn it off every time.
Okay, try this. When you come up to a traffic light, go do this tomorrow morning. Just drive it in a parking lot, and when you're coming up to the thing, then throw it into neutral.
Okay, well, I can just turn it off. It's got a button on it that I can turn it off easier than that.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering, will the engine stay running if I throw it into neutral?
Yes, it will.
Okay. Okay, and then could you just put it back into drive and take off when the light turns green?
I could, yes.
Why? I mean, that isn't that kind of the mid-range, middle ground?
Well, yeah, I can just, it's got a button right next to the gear shift that I can just touch that, and it's off until I restart it the next time.
I understand. It defaults to start-stop, and you have to manually override that. I understand.
Yes.
All right, Bill, good luck, buddy. Thank you. Gary, you're up next.
Hi, Mark. I have a follow-up question. I called earlier about the golf cart batteries. And I just, real quick, I charged the first two batteries. I got it up to like 5.7 volts on each battery. And then I tried the charger. It didn't light up. And then I've got it going on all six batteries now. Is that a good? It's slowly going up, but it's taking time to build that up. Should I be doing them all at the same time?
Well, you're doing the all with the charger that came with the golf cart, right?
Well, I'm doing it with my truck right now to get a charge so that the charger for the golf cart, we wanted to build up something so it would light up and actually start charging. And you had said jump it, with another vehicle.
Okay. When you get the batteries up to the five and three quarter mark on a six, a fully charged 6 volt battery is about 6.5, maybe 7 volts. That's a fully charged battery.
Okay.
So when you're at 5.75, you're almost there. So you could leave your truck there until you get all of them up to there. But then if you can't get the normal charger to take control of your golf cart, then there's a problem there. You're going to have to deal with that problem.
Right.
I was just thinking we have to get the threshold higher than it is and then go from there.
Okay.
But what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to cook the batteries anyway. So keep your hands on the side of the case of the batteries and don't let them get hot. They can be warm, but they can't be hot. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck, Gary.
All right. And then is there a certain voltage that you before that charger would sense that? Is there something, a certain voltage that I'm looking for?
I'm thinking that the batteries individually and as a group have to be somewhere between, 5.7, 5.8 and north of that.
Okay.
I would think that because you're going to be 6.5 all the way around when they're all fully charged, assuming that you're going to test them independent of one another. So, got to run, Gary. Thank you very much. Joe, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. I have a 2001 Chevy, and it's got high mileage, and it has low oil pressure. It's starting to decrease in the oil pressure. And so my question is, if I put a pump in, is it worth putting a pump in, or if I do, is it a high pressure pump, a high volume pump?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's talk about what are you using, what are you seeing that tells you that you've had a drop in oil pressure?
Just the idiot gauge on the dash.
Okay. Now, on the gauge itself, it has what we call a goal post. So it has two vertical lines that are kind of like the windshield, and then in the middle of those two vertical lines, there's a range that's normal. So
there's some numbers on it, and 40 is the middle straight up.
Okay, 20, good.
And it doesn't go above 20, 25, and then at idle, it'll drop down to the zero range.
Okay.
I keep it.
Okay, I understand. Now, when it drops down to zero, does the red light come on, or is there any clattering that you're hearing from the motor?
No.
Okay.
It knocks when it's cold. It knocks when it's cold, and it's at low idle. Rev it up, and then as it warms up a little bit, the knocking
okay.
is left.
All right. Well, I think what you should first do is go buy a new oil pressure switch, and I think you should replace the oil pressure switch first. That's usually at the back of the engine. And you need a special socket to do that. And it's a really, it's sometimes they're hard to get to and sometimes they aren't. Us old guys, we don't think it's very hard to get to them. But, or it could be down by the oil filter too. So I would put an oil pressure switch in it and see if that changes the gauge. But what you're missing is that I need to hear is the clattering. If you have oil pressure that's substandard, you're going to have an engine clatter, you're going to have lifters clattering, and you haven't said anything about that. So I'm suspect of the gauge or the sending unit. I'm not suspect that you're running, because if you run down the road with low oil pressure and you're doing 60, 70, and if your wife's driving 80 miles an hour, it ain't going to last very long at 10 pounds of PSI.
No, when it's running at speed, it's up around 20, 25.
Okay.
So I guess my fear is that, well, like you said, that it may be the gauge then.
Yeah. You're missing some real strong, this is what I hear when we lose oil pressure, clatter. I need to have clatter involved in this conversation. Without clatter, then I'm thinking, oil pressure switch, oil gauge, something like that.
Well, when I was running, I did run it a little low, like, a quart low or so, and it does have a constant noise then.
Okay, you put a quart back in it, did the noise go away?
Yes.
Okay. I can't really explain it, because now we've got this kind of moving target. When a motor starts knocking, it ain't going to get better. When the motor starts clattering, it'll get better with oil, but not a quart. That's unusual.
Okay.
Here's what I think you should do. You should take it to a garage, call a garage and say, can I borrow or can I rent a manual gauge from you for 24 hours? I want you to take my oil pressure switch out, put your manual gauge, tape it to the windshield, bring it up through the crack of the hood, tape it to the windshield, and all I want to do, I'll pay you a deposit, I want to put a manual gauge on it, and I want to drive it for 24 hours or 2 days and see if a shop will do that. I mean, we do that. We've done that for our customers over the years with no problem. So that's really what you need to do. We need to find out if we've got a problem or not, and if we have a problem with the sending unit or if we have a problem with the oil pressure. Those are the two issues. Or the gauge. Those are the three issues. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
Good luck, Joe. Thank you. Car repair is hard enough, but what's really important, and I think if you listen to the show, I ask a lot of questions. That's what's missing when you're talking to the YouTube genius who is really a convict in a Maryland prison. The fact of the matter is that you have to ask the right questions. Let's just use Joe as an example, and I'm not picking on Joe. He's talking about putting an oil pump in his truck and for his engine, and that's a big job. Oftentimes you have to pull the exhaust. You have to pull the oil pan. And when you pull the oil pan, then you're going to clean it up and you're going to have to get the gasket right, and there's a 50-50 chance that a novice is going to have an oil leak after they do all that work because they're not going to get the gasket on right. And you know how Mark knows is because when he was young, he didn't get the first 20 gaskets on right. But now he hits 100%. So those are the kinds of discussions that you have to have. You have to have that kind of talk back and forth. So if you call up the shop and say, I have this, and he goes, oh, you need a new transmission, I'd probably make a couple other calls, because I'm not capable of diagnosing a bad transmission over the phone any better than anybody else in town is. Unless, of course, you put it in drive and it don't move. And it's full of fluid and it doesn't move. And the fluid's burnt. And the fluid smells really, really bad. And it's got 250,000 miles on it. Okie dokie. I'm pretty sure you need a transmission. So those are the kinds of, this is the discussion. And there's three answers when you're talking to your technician or to the shop owner or the service writer. Three answers to every question. Yes, no, or I don't know. Now, the women have no problem with the I don't know. But guys, man, they'll make stuff up. They're just kind of embarrassed to have a female service writer ask them a question and they have to answer it with I don't know. And, of course, I'm teasing everybody about it. I'm not serious. But the idea is that's what's really what's good, successful car repair is all about. Women, husband says to take it to the shop and tell them this. Ladies, you say, write it down, big dog. Write it down. Tell them what you want to tell them, and I'm going to hand that to them. I am not going to be in the middle between you and the hairy-chested technician over at the repair shop we've been using for 20 years. I'm not going to do that, honey. Write it down. Give it to me, and I'll hand it to him. So I'm not going to represent what you want him to do, or I'll just tell him to call you at work. That's it. Those are the kinds of things that makes car repair bad and good. And I especially have a soft spot in my heart for ladies that come in, because when they hit the front counter, you can tell they don't want to be there. They've got a big laundry list that they've been told by their husband. And it's now a list of stuff he wants done is one thing. The problem is why does he want it done? I don't know. Well, Joe's wife, he says it's got low oil pressure, so we put this back together, and guess what? It has the same oil pressure it had when we started after we spent $800. Now what happens? Oh, let's replace the oil pressure switch. Oh, the oil pressure switch is $20. The labor to install it's $20. This was really a $40 repair. We should have just done that at the front end of this deal. That's kind of what it's all about. So just do your best to talk about symptoms. Hot, cold, left, right. When does it do it? When doesn't it do it? All that kind of stuff. That helps a lot. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem, spelled like the cigarette, .com. mark@marksalem.com. And make sure you give me a phone number. And I usually call back on a blocked line, but we have lots to talk about. And I do as many calls a day as I can. So anyway, we'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT. I'm Mark Salem. God bless you. Have a good week.